This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Good morning, CFRA Nation. I mean afternoon. That's when you know that Christy Cameron's not here. And this is Stefan Keys of CTV Morning Live. And I really did tell myself that I wasn't going to say good morning. So I think I jinxed myself, Danny, for sure.
I was mouthing it to you. I was like, afternoon.
Oh, that's what you were doing?
Yes.
I didn't know.
You were singing to me. And I'm like, no, afternoon.
I really thought you were mouthing lyrics. How am I supposed to know all of that lip work was afternoon?
I don't know.
Anyways, good afternoon, everyone. Apologies for my mistake. Hope you're all well. Christy's feeling a little bit under the weather, so you're stuck with me until about 6 p.m. Please don't change the dial. Stay with us. We have a great show in store for you and this hot topic, question of the day. We're going to explain it to you first, but we know times are tough. We call it TET, tough economic times. We're all going through it. We're all feeling it. Many of us are changing our habits and our behaviors, either it be maybe you're using public transit a little bit more. Maybe you're more conscious of how you spend your dollars at the grocery store, or you're finding ways to save on filling up at the tanks because things are going up. Those variable mortgages that you're having to spend more on, we understand. But how about this? Are you compromising on the best before dates on food? How do you feel about eating food after the suggested best before date or expiry date even? So a new report shows Canadians are doing it more and more. This is a report from Dalhousie University that says it's obviously because grocery prices are sky high. We've seen food inflation. We've seen shrinkflation, where you're getting less while you're paying more. And so in lieu of wasting food, people say they're taking the gamble. That being said, food researcher Keith Warner says that the best before dates are different from expiry dates, and you're not necessarily putting your life on the line.
When we look at best before dates, basically it's the supplier's, processor's best estimate when the quality will be good, but after that date, the quality might deteriorate. And when I say the best guess, it literally is the best guess. So to get to your question about your mayonnaise, yeah, even when it gets to the best before date, you don't suddenly say, wow, you know, it's going to be lethal and throw it out.
So Warner joined Bill Carroll on the Morning Rush this morning, and he tells CFRA that the best before date was introduced primarily as a gut check rather than anything too precise.
The best before date, in actual fact, was introduced by Marks & Spencer in the UK as just for stock rotation and then to show quality, because they wanted to make sure they sold the best of the best.
So essentially, if you're the kind of person that always took that gamble, you likely don't have anything to worry about. This is not a thing for you. But for many, it is. And increasingly, Canadians are making that choice because they feel like they have to. They're not willing to throw out the food. They're going to say, oh, maybe it's still good. Maybe it's still a little good. Let's stretch, because we can't afford to waste like we used to. The report says nearly 60% of respondents to the survey are more inclined to eat food past the best before date because of that cost. 9,000 people were surveyed. Of that group, Gen Z and millennials were the most likely to believe they got sick from eating spoiled food. And so after 2:30, we will be checking in with Sylvain Charlebois with more on this. But, I mean, Danny, is there anything that you're like, no, I'm good. Like, I've pushed the envelope on before.
Oh, absolutely. Bread, I'm pushing the envelope a little more. As long as I don't see any green fuzz on it, I'll ingest it.
Okay, I think that's fair. I'm typically, like, anything dairy-based, I'm like,
I don't know.
My gut's not going to be happy. I already have a little trouble digesting dairy. TMI, I know. But anything like yogurt, milk, I'm not really going to push it past that date. Even cheese, shredded cheese, I'm not going to do that. But you know what I mean? If the cracker is a little softer than it used to be.
Sure.
Whatevs.
We'll throw some good cheese on it and make it taste a little better.
Yeah.
But when it comes to dairy, there is a a brand, I'm not going to name the brand, that I find tends to go bad before the best before date.
Oh, that's no bueno.
No, it's no bueno. So I try to avoid that brand.
Well, now I'm curious to know, but I understand avoiding a defamation suit by naming the brand on live radio.
So I will refrain from using the name.
But let us know what your thoughts are. Text us 580-580. We're going to make that the question of the day. In fact, you can even email ottawa.morning@ctv.ca because that's going to be the question of the day for our social room tomorrow. And give us your take. Are you changing your habits when it comes to the best before dates? Are there foods in particular that you're like, no, guys, this one's okay. It's still good.
How's your sniffer for the sniff test?
Oh, my sniffer's great.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Like meat, I'm like, no good.
Okay. I can't trust mine because I have allergies, especially around this time of year.
Right.
I can't smell anything properly. So I have to always ask someone else, hey, can you smell this for me and let me know and I'll trust you.
Okay.
So
it just makes you kind of just make it sound like you're not willing to offend your nose. Everyone else has to offend their nose.
Oh, I try it, but I don't trust it because my nose is blocked. I don't know if you can hear the congestion right now, but it's not reliable.
Okay, all right. Well, Danny, just eat grapes in the store where they are uber fresh, says Todd. Todd, I don't know if you're supposed to do that. Walk around the grocery store, rubbing off the dirt with your fingers, popping it into your mouth. I've seen people do this. So, I don't do this myself.
No, so Todd is talking about my confession one day where before I buy grapes, I will taste test them first before purchasing because grapes are expensive. So I don't want to take a whole bag home
and find out it's sour and not sweet.
Exactly. So I do a little taste test, just one grape.
You promise?
I promise, just one grape.
I know confessions are for Friday sometimes, but promise, just one?
It's just one grape. And if it's good, then hey, I'll take the whole bag. No problem. I will pay the astronomical price for grapes because I love grapes and they're healthy. But if they're not good, I'll just leave it and just say thank you for the really bad grape.
Do you taste test anything else in the grocery store that we should know about?
No, just the grapes.
Just the grapes?
Just the grapes. Or sometimes you'll eat a banana before you get to the cash.
Never.
And then you bring the banana, like the banana peel with you.
No, that's a joke, right?
No.
Anyone else in this room?
I don't think you can do that.
Yeah. My dad has had to do that a few times. He's diabetic, so if he's not feeling well, he has to, have something a little sugary. Or if you're really hankering for something, you eat it and then you bring the peel to the...
But isn't it based on weight?
Then you just bring an extra banana and you put the banana back.
Okay, so dad gets a pass because he's saving his own life with the re-up there.
Yeah.
But not when you're hangry.
Yeah.
This is poor grocery store etiquette.
Don't listen to me for tips. I'm just saying this is what I do. But I always make sure, especially for bananas, it's such an easy thing to weigh. Or you just tell the cashier, and the cashier's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what if there's a discrepancy in the size of the banana? They're still okay with it?
Well, yeah, because bananas really aren't that much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't give me that look.
Yeah, I'm judging you. We're hearing from Louise who says, I refuse to touch anything past the best before date. My husband doesn't believe in the best before date and will eat and drink everything until it actually goes bad.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting perspective because clearly that person has a great sniff test. And I'd be like, it's still good a week later.
Oh, my dad, we razzed on him a bit a few months ago because he was eating bread that was clearly bad. Mm-mm. But he was like, no, it's fine. I'm not sick.
Right. Well, folks, it's 2:18. This is the Fan Keys of CTV Morning Live in for Christy Cameron this afternoon. We'll be back shortly.
Join the conversation on Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron. Text 580-580 right now.
Avenue. And then we'll take it higher. Oh, we're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue.
What a great tune to welcome us back into our next topic. If you're just tuning in, this is Stefan Keys in for Christy Cameron this afternoon. Join our conversations. You can text us at any time, 580-580. We just finished a very fruitful conversation, if you will, around expiry dates, best before dates. We learned that, you know, Danny sometimes has poor etiquette at the grocery store. Joking, Danny, we love you. But coming down to Electric Avenue, let's talk about Honda bringing a major electric vehicle battery plant to Ontario as part of a $15 billion project, including $5 billion of taxpayer funds. The battery plant will go to Alliston, Ontario, next to the existing assembly facility, and there will be $2.5 billion provided by both the federal and provincial government. Premier Doug Ford says once complete, the facility will be a powerhouse.
Once built and operational, Honda's massive new electric vehicle plant and EV battery facility here in Alliston will employ more than 4,200 people and have the production capacity to produce up to 240,000 electric vehicles each and every year.
So clearly a powerhouse, both figuratively and literally. Ford says it's the largest auto investment in Canadian history. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says it is an important step toward Canada meeting emissions targets as well.
In Canada, our target is that 100% of all light-duty cars and passenger truck sales be zero emission by 2035. As a great Canadian once said, that is where the puck is going, and that is where we're going to be.
That is where we're going to be. Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland also touted the program's long-term impacts.
This is a historic investment that is going to have a generational impact on workers here in Ontario and across Canada, now and for years to come.
So this environmental aspect of electric vehicles was really important when it came to how people responded to the speed limit changes as well. Because a lot of people were just talking about enforcement, whether or not it was a good idea, whether or not it would make a difference to a lot of people. And some people wrote into us when we asked on CTV Morning Live saying, okay, we can talk about speed and it not making a big difference. But what about the fact that if we go faster, you're actually emitting more emissions? Like there's more gas emissions being funneled into our atmosphere, and we're not having that environmental conversation. So this kind of goes hand in hand with that. And the deal comes after years of meetings between the provincial government and Honda executives. A similar Stellantis plant is also coming to Ontario with major financial incentives from the government after construction briefly stopped as they pressed the federal government to match what the United States would offer under its then new Inflation Reduction Act. So really interesting conversations taking place, a lot of overlap. How are you feeling about the EV conversation?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know we need to do something, but I'm more of maybe, I subscribe to the idea of more of a hybrid. I don't know if I want to completely bet on an electric vehicle.
Right.
Because we don't have the infrastructure yet in place to support all those vehicles that would be electric based. So I like the idea of having a backup gas plan on my vehicle if I'm stuck in the middle of nowhere.
No, for sure. And that's a lot of the feedback that we've gotten from viewers and listeners who already have electric vehicles. They've been disappointed that there aren't more stations to charge, especially for those longer road trips. And so we can make and manufacture more vehicles, but what else is coming along with it? And we're hoping to see more of that. It'd be a part of the conversation as well.
My concern, I think it's probably the way to, I think the EVs are a good thing. However, I'm a little worried about, you're reading articles about Volkswagen, Ford. They're reducing the amount of EVs that they're producing. I'm just worried that, you know, that we're going to be left holding the bag, you know, just with all this money, like, you know, with Stellantis, with Volkswagen, that, you know, we're just throwing money away. I think it's a good cause. I don't think throwing money away is a good cause, but I think, you know, the electric vehicle is potentially beneficial for the environment. But right. Is this going to put us in a hole?
From a taxpayer perspective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it costing us too much to kind of boost up these manufacturers to get them going and say, hey, we're open for business. Come start a plant in Ontario. Come north of the border. Cross the Atlantic. Build those EVs here. So we're going to have to kind of see, especially when we're hearing that may not be holding up too great in the cold.
No, and then you have the federal government and provincial government saying they need to up productivity. So this is one of those ways to invite other companies out there saying, hey, you know, we definitely need you in our country, in our province to help foster that productivity and innovation. Second, I mean, yes, EVs are good with the environment in terms of you're not using as much gas, but what happens to those batteries after, those car batteries after they need to be replaced? And I think they need to be replaced after 10 or 20 years. So that's a lot of batteries with a lot of chemicals that we don't know how we're going to dispose of yet.
That's correct. And I like the word productivity, which I know we're going to be getting to our 2:30 news very shortly, but how productive are we being when we all know that colleague who's often sick, and sometimes it's as easy as sending some electronic communication over email. You don't have to face the music with the managers by calling them up and having to explain yourself. But we know that there's a lot of protocol in the place with the amount of days you can take back to back and whether or not you're going to need a sick note. So get this. The Ontario government is moving to eliminate the need for sick notes from a doctor's office for employees to get out of work. So if Dr. Barry Dworkin is any indication, this is a long time coming.
It's the reverse when the employer is saying, well, you know, you need a note. I'm not an arbiter. Leave me alone. I don't even be involved in that. It's not my job to be the person who is ordaining the patient and saying yes or no that you were sick so the employer has some paperwork. Get off of my butt. I don't want to do it.
Ooh, some strong words there. And that's what we're hearing from doctors saying, administratively, it's too much. The requests are too much. We just take it at face value, scouts honor, and we send out those notes. It's not for us to judge or determine how sick a person is. So the problem says the move is to help decrease the paperwork burden being placed on doctors. Employers will still have the ability to ask for other forms of proof from employees for the use of provincially mandated sick days. So what are lawyers saying?
Right now, under Ontario laws, employees must get at a minimum 3 unpaid sick days a year. And what the Ford government is saying, for the purpose of those unpaid days, you cannot, employer, ask for a doctor's note. But here's the thing. Most employers actually provide paid sick days. So for the purpose of the paid sick days, an employer can absolutely still say, yeah, if you want a paid sick day, you have to bring a doctor's note.
There you go, folks. Let us know what you think. Text us 580-580. That was employment lawyer Lior Samfiru, who says because the scope is limited, that means this won't be a big deal. It's 2:30. Time for your top news headlines.
Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hey, my question for you today is...
Only one question.
Quick question.
Question.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Question of the day. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. It's 2:37. Clearly not Christy Cameron. This is Stefan Keys of CTV Morning Live. And we want to know, how do you feel about eating food past the best before date or the expiry date? Many of you have already weighed in on the text board. Text us 580-580 to let us know. We're hearing from Yanni, who says, there is nothing wrong with eating something after the due date. Most food is still safe for consumption even after a couple of days, especially if it's in the fridge. It all depends on how hungry you are. Lots of people in the world go hungry to bed and would love to have expired yogurt, which is a fairly good point. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of people stretch it. They don't want to go to their beds hungry. They want to keep the lights on. They want to keep the roofs over their kids' heads and still have food in the house to eat without feeling like they're wasting. Why are we asking you this today on this day, do you say? Because there's a new result of a survey out. So food inflation clearly has pushed Canadians to think differently about food. As some grocery costs remain high, a new report has found that many people are open to eating foods that have gone past the best before dates. This is a report by Dalhousie University's Agri-Food Lab, which says nearly 60% of respondents to the survey are more inclined to eat risky foods because of high prices. 9,000 people were surveyed, just in case you're wondering. And of that group, Gen Z and millennials were the most likely to believe they got sick from eating spoiled food. Nearly half of the participants surveyed have turned to different food storage methods like freezing bread and meat products to extend the shelf life. They also say frozen foods carry its risks as well. That's according to experts. But when it comes to throwing food away or eating something that could potentially make you sick, more and more people are taking to the risk to save on the groceries, as we've mentioned. So again, today we're asking you, let's light up this text board. Do you eat food that has gone past its best before date? Text us 580-580. And while you're thinking about your responses, I want to bring in Sylvain Charlebois into the conversation. He's the director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University. He is here with us now to talk more about this. Good afternoon, Sylvain.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you again. Great to chat with you. Were you surprised by the results, or does the price of food speak for itself?
Well, I was surprised by the percentages, to be sure. So 58% of Canadians now are enticed to eat food products that are past their best before dates, much more so than just last year. That's more than half. That's a lot.
Right.
And then the other troubling stat we came up with is the number of people who believe to have gotten sick as a result of doing so. And so 20%, so one in five Canadians have actually fell ill, or they believe to have felt ill due to consuming one of these products. And the younger generations are more affected. 41% of millennials believe to have actually had a foodborne illness as a result of eating a unsafe food product. And for Gen Zs, it's at around 24-25%. So those percentages are pretty high.
They are pretty high. Do we know why Gen Z, or Canadian terms, Gen Z and millennials in particular, are feeling this way or have that type of relationship with food as opposed to other generations?
We have two theories. One, of course, younger crowds, younger folks feel more confident with their body, with their health conditions. So they feel if they do eat something that's not safe, they'll still be fine. So that's one factor. The other factor, of course, is the financial factor. Time and time again, we have seen in the data that that most generations, well, all generations are impacted by the cost of living situation we're all dealing with. Yeah. But pressure is much higher on the younger generation, for sure. Like, millennials are in their economic prime. They probably carry a mortgage, maybe even a couple of mortgages. They're in debt. They have kids, and so they're under a lot of pressure. So they're trying to save any way they can. And the one easiest way to save on a day-to-day basis is by reducing the amount of food you buy or the amount of money you spend on food. In fact, this week, Statistics Canada reminded us that we're spending less on food per capita. And so one thing that this report is telling us is that people are likely wasting less, which is a good thing. But while they're wasting less, they may be risking more.
Right. And Sylvain, while I have you, can you break down the difference for us between the best before date and a hard, firm expiry date? We mentioned it earlier, but some folks are just hopping in their vehicles now and tuning in and going to pick up the kids. So if you could break that down for us again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's a very important distinction. So, and this study is all about best before dates, because with best before dates, you need judgment. You need some sort of evaluation at home. And we've always believed that the most important risk manager of the entire food chain is a consumer, because most illnesses are due to some of the things that have actually occurred at home, cross-contamination, lack of cleanliness for instruments and things like that. So really, the consumer plays a big role. And so best before dates are really an indicator telling consumers when is the optimal moment or time to consume a particular product. It doesn't mean bad after, but an expiry date is a hard expiry date. You should not ever consume a product after its expiry date. And that applies to just a handful of products, including baby formula.
Okay. And I'm going to press a little further, not to put you on the spot here, but when we say optimal, is that more of optimal around taste or truly for your health and that gut check, how you respond, your body responds to it?
No, it's really, it's the manufacturers, it's the food industry, grocers. They will set a date, and that date is almost trivial, to be honest. I mean, so obviously the food industry will want you and I to consume their product at their optimal state, so we'll be inclined to buy more.
Right.
So that's why you now see best before dates on honey and sugar and salt, things that will never go bad ever. And so there's some abuse there, but generally speaking, the industry will set a date, basically forcing us to eat a product when the product is still fresh. After the best before date, then it's up to you and I to decide if that product is consumable or not. So you rely on your senses.
That's so insightful. And thank you so much for that clarification, because we do, as a consumer, tend to have this relationship of if it's beyond the best before, then it's going to be bad for us or hurt us. But that's not necessarily the case, especially if it's that trivial or if there's another agenda by the industry.
Exactly. So no, I'm not suggesting there's an agenda by the industry, but obviously any company will want us to eat a product that is good. And so that's why most often we're kind of tricked, and a lot of people, we've been programmed to rely on best before dates and thinking that these dates are really a safety indicator, but it's not really a safety indicator. It's more of a quality indicator. But at the same time, I mean, nobody really knows for sure when a product actually expires. Don't forget, I mean, sometimes, like when you buy cheese, for example, not all the cheese you bought will go bad. You can actually cut off the part that is bad and eat the rest, by the way. But some people just don't want to do that. They're not comfortable. And that's fine. It's very... Food safety management is very personal at home.
Right, right. And when I said agenda, I didn't mean it to sound villainous. I just was picking up on the fact that we tend to buy more based off of this best before date. So there is that unintended consequence of them gaining capital from that.
So the report today is clearly telling us that people aren't necessarily falling for that as much anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, Stefan.
All right, Sylvain, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I always appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye. You do. It's 2:47 here on Ottawa Now.
I'm picking out this dress, trying on these shoes, because I'll be single soon. I'll be single soon. I know he'll be a mess when I break the news, but I'll be single soon.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
It's going to be a break. It is Joe Sakic scores. Joe Sakic scores. And that makes it 5-2 Canada. Surely that's got to be it.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Stefan Keys in for Christy Cameron this afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. A celebratory moment, but Canadian hockey fans are in mourning today. Iconic play-by-play broadcaster Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. Cole's daughter Megan told CBC News he died yesterday in St. John's, Newfoundland, surrounded by his family. Cole began calling NHL games for CBC Radio in 1969 and moved to work on Hockey Night in Canada in 73. He was the voice for so many iconic games, like the 1972 Summit Series.
Savard gets it away for Henderson, coming down alone. Henderson up near the line, four Russians there. Henderson going in, he scores! Henderson on a fantastic effort against four!
And if you don't recall that, you may recall Canada's gold medal win in the 2002 Winter Olympics. What a life, what a legacy, that iconic voice. Dean Brown is here with us. He's the Senators radio play-by-play voice on TSN 1200. Dean, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, Steph.
When you think about this iconic voice, when you think about Bob Cole and his legacy and calling games for something like five decades, what comes to mind? How do you remember him as someone who is fully immersed in sport?
Yeah, well, you know what? I knew Coley for, you know, over 30 years. You know, he was one of the first guys I met when I started doing hockey myself 32 years ago. So, known Coley for a very long time. You know what? He's automatic into the all-time greats list. And in our business, you considering how old hockey is and play-by-play is a very specific thing. There's really not many of us. It's a very short list when you go to the all-time greats, and he's on that list. You know, if you're thinking of your list, it's Foster Hewitt, it's Gallivan, it's Dick Irvin, it's Dan Kelly, and it's Bob Cole. Maybe Doc Emrick slips into that list as well, but it's a very short list, and he's one of the all-time greats. And I think for most of us who do this, one of the things that was a mesmerizing ability he had was big play intuition. You could tell in his voice that he felt something was going to happen that was big, and usually it did. He had this unique, spooky kind of intuition where he could just tell.
What else made him great in that regard? Because I agree with you. Hearing him call games, it's almost like he revs you up before something even takes place and then brings you to that climactic goal.
You know what? I think one of the things, Steph, with Bob is he was of singular focus. You know, on game day, he did not do a lot of prep work. Like, you know, he did not do a lot of background work, but he was laser focused on the players, their numbers, their positions, and who they played with. And he would talk with every head coach before the game, and they would give him their lines, which is something that head coaches, a lot of them, don't give to anybody, but they would give them to Bob Cole. There was actually only one guy in the entire league, Peter Laviolette, who wouldn't give Bob Cole his lines, and Coley hated him for it. But he did not let himself in. The way he looked at it is there's statisticians and there's color guys to do that other stuff. He was singularly focused on the players, singularly focused on their positions, and singularly focused on who they played with. And that's what he brought to the game. And he was just exceptional at being focused on what mattered most to him.
For sure. And, you know, he called his final game in 2019. So it's been 5 years now as he eased into retirement and end of life, as we now know. His daughter said he was healthy until the end. But in one of those final interviews, he described himself as being the soundtrack of Saturday night. Do you think the rest of the country, that's exactly how they saw him as well?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, Steph, not just Saturday nights. You think about, and if you're my age, I'm 62 years old. If you're my age, you listen to him virtually your entire listening and hearing life. You know, you just knew that, you know, that's the guy. And, you know, back then with TV distribution, it was a situation where, you know, you didn't necessarily know exactly, you know, which game you were going to get, but it was always going to be Toronto, and it was always going to be him calling the game. You know, that was one of the things. So many people heard him repetitively Saturday night after Saturday night. So, you know, he was the soundtrack for not only Saturday nights, but if you think of some of the greatest moments in hockey, in playoff hockey, and there was games on other than Saturday nights, he was also the soundtrack of that. So I think for, you know, this generation, my generation, he is the soundtrack of most of the biggest hockey events that took place. And that's why, you know, his voice resonates with so many people when they hear it.
For the next generation of broadcasters or hockey color commentators, if he's leaving a legacy and a mark, is there something that many take away from his style, would you say?
You know what? That's a great question, Steph. And I don't know that you can, because he was so unique In the way he called games and the way he prepared for games, I'm not sure anybody does or can or would want to, because then you're almost sounding like you're stealing things, you know, especially, you know, him, Foster, Hewitt, and Gallivan. They really created the language that we now, all of us that do this job, they created the language that we now use. They created the lexicon. They created the words and the sayings. And if you listen to a game, there's so many things that get said by so many guys that are virtually the same. Well, they come from those three guys and how they did it. But I don't know if anybody would be able to take anything as a young broadcaster away from Bob Cole other than be exactly who you are, because that's what Bob was. Bob was exactly who he was every time the mic went on and the camera went on. And that would be the one lesson, because let's face it, trying to imitate what he did and how he did it would be impossible. You know, that's what makes him an icon. But he certainly showed that, you know, if you be exactly who you are and do it your way, there can be some great things ahead of you.
Certainly. And, you know, as a newscaster, I got that same advice. You find your own voice within the style of the delivery. Dean, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, no problem, Steph. Anytime.
You take care. It is 2:59. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, your top news headlines.